It gets lighter and lighter, and in the growing brightness I see a remarkable landscape. A high mountain with a steep, stony, narrow path leading up to it. I know this path leads to the goal, to God. Without hesitating, I start to follow it. The path leads through friendly countryside, higher and higher. I climb untiringly until the charming green landscape lies behind me and I gradually reach the inhospitable region of the high mountains. The pathway gets ever steeper, narrower and stonier, but I climb with astonishing ease, so light as if I were gliding. The inhabited territory lies behind me. My horizon widens, and I see everything far below me. But there is no time to look around, and I go on. After many curves, the narrower pathway ends in front of a short stairway with 7 steps. Each step is twice as high as the one before. Under a crystal blue sky, I stand there all alone in front of these 7 steps and know that I must climb them. With a deep sigh and with faith in the power the Creator has given each of His children, the power which in my case has miraculously gone on undiminished and even increased as I have climbed this long path, I walk up to the steps. The first step is low. I must conquer the weight of my body in order to lift myself up onto it. I succeed easily. The second step is somewhat higher and awakens the resistance of my body. I have long ago conquered the forces of the body, and so this step too causes me no trouble. The third is noticeably higher. In order to conquer this one, I have to conquer my feelings. As I become master of my feelings, I am on the third step. As I face the fourth step, which is surprisingly high, thoughts of doubt overcome me. How will I be able to climb it? Have I enough strength? Then I realize that my doubts are weakening me, paralyzing me. But doubt is a thought. So I must conquer my thoughts in order to master doubt. Thanks to my long training and my exercises in the temple, I know what I have to do. I gather all the strength of my soul, I am absolute faith in God, and think of absolutely nothing. And behold, as my thoughts disappear, my doubts disappear too. And I am on the fourth step. Curiously, I feel I have grown much larger while I have been climbing these steps. Each time I've gone up a step, I've grown some more, and now I'm much, much larger than I was at the beginning. Now I face the fifth step, which, even though I've grown a great deal, is so high that I can only get up by using both hands and both feet. As I pull myself up with great difficulty, I suddenly find to my great surprise that I have no body anymore. Everything in me or about me that was material has disappeared, and I am invisible spirit. The sixth step is very, very high, and a new difficulty awaits me. I have no body, no hands with which to hang on and no feet with which to push myself up. How am I supposed to get up there? I look about me for some way to do it, and as I turn around, I suddenly see the whole world spread out below me. Country after country. City after city looking like little toys and houses with countless people living in them. Infinite love for them all seizes me and I am pained to think of all the people who would have to travel the long, laborious pathway of recognition. Of all the innumerable people feeling their way forward in the darkness, imprisoned in their own selfishness just as I was once. And, wonder of wonders! Exclamation mark. The moment universal love floods my heart, I am raised up and find myself on the sixth step. Now I stand before the last and highest step of all. It is just as high as I am. I long so much to get up there and this wish fills my whole being. In vain. I just don't know what to do. I have no hands, no feet nor muscular strength of body with which to pull myself up. But I must get up there at any price. Up on top I'll find God, and I am determined to see Him face to face. I stand, waiting, but nothing happens. As I look around me, I find to my great surprise that I'm not alone. At this very moment a being similar to myself reaches the sixth step and begs me to help him up to the seventh. I understand his tremendous desire, and, forgetting my own longing to reach the seventh step, I try to help him reach his goal. But the very moment I forget my own wish, I suddenly find that I am up on top of the seventh step, I don't know how, and my companion is no longer there. He has disappeared without leaving a trace. He was an illusion who helped me forget my last self-centered wish. As long as I wanted to raise up my own person, I would never be able to conquer the step that was as high as I myself. I have arrived. Quicker than the flash of lightning, I see the form of a heavenly being woven of dazzling light. My complementary half. His irresistible attraction draws me to him, and, full of delight and fulfillment, I melt into complete union with him in his heart. I realize that he was always I and I always he, the dualistic projected image of my divine, true self. In this dualistic state I always faced God as a being separate from myself, and I felt him as you. Now in paradisiacal unity, I feel that this invisible power I have so far always called God will become myself in the next moment. A disc woven of fire begins to rotate about me. And in its immovable axis, in my spinal column, my true self, I, am dwelling. And I feel my spinal column burning like a white-hot bow, like a bridge made up of the current of life, radiating brilliant light through seven centers of force, vitalizing my body. Then, beyond all concept of time, I simultaneously see the endlessly long chain of the different forms of life in which I have been incarnated throughout ages and eons of time as I travel the long pathways of development from my first fallout of paradisiacal unity up to the present moment. I see that my countless lives have been, are, and will be inseparably linked with the lives of the same spirits. From the events of past lives, new relationships emerge, new ties, new developments, all supplementing each other and fitting together perfectly like the little stones in a big mosaic. I recognize the threads linking me with my complementary half, with Tahotep, with Atothis, with Amma and Boga and many, many other people. I see clearly how these threads have bound us all together for ages of time, how souls more advanced than we are have helped us, how we have helped each other and those less advanced in the great task of the spiritualization of the earth, in developing our consciousness in matter, in the body. The experiences we bring each other in all these lives help expand and deepen the consciousness in the body, while the bodies we inhabit get progressively more spiritual, more beautiful. The matter composing our various forms of manifestation becomes ever more elastic, more responsible to the will and the radiations of the spirit, until finally the body becomes an obedient servant of the self, no longer isolating or obscuring a single ray of light from the spirit. I understand the secret of the pyramid, for now I have become a pyramid myself, only using matter, the body, as a firm footing, but constantly manifesting divinity. Then everything about me, the earth, sky, the entire universe, all merge in a single gigantic sea of fire. Huge flames encompass me. For a moment I feel as if I, with the entire cosmos, were being destroyed. Flashes of lightning crack and snap through my veins, through my entire being, as the fire burns me. And then, suddenly everything changes, the fire is no longer consuming me but I myself am this heavenly fire, penetrating everything, animating everything, consuming everything. A flood of light surrounds me, but this flood of light is arising within myself. I am the source of this light and of everything else that is. The earth has no effect on me anymore. Its attraction which held me in fetters ceases. I am floating in nothingness, my being has no limitations anymore. 7 AM Now the one who attracts everything, but nothing ties me down anymore, nothing attracts me anymore. I seek those whom I have loved, for I know they couldn't be destroyed, but I seek them in vain, in the nothingness about me. In the emptiness there is nothing but myself, so I have to turn my attention inward. Behold, even as I do so I realize that everyone and everything is living in me. The universe is in me, for everything that is living in me. Everything that is, I am. In everything that I love myself. And suddenly I realize that everything I have always believed I didn't love was what I had not yet recognized within myself. Now that I recognize myself perfectly, I love everything and everyone equally, for I am one with them, I am I in everything, in all. I am fulfillment, life, radiant, eternal, immortal being. There is no longer any struggle, any regret, any suffering, no decay, no end, no death. In all that is born I, the immortal, begin a new form of life, and in all that dies I, the immortal, withdraw into myself, back into the eternal, creative, divine self. I realize that time and space exist only on the periphery of the created world, which is like a disc rotating with dizzying speed. But I, within myself, am timeless, spaceless eternity. And while I am resting within myself, my eternal being fills space and everything living in it. I am the only reality, I am life, I am that I am. I rest within myself and feel infinite peace. But in this peace a call reaches me and compels me to return to my deserted body. I turn the searchlight of my consciousness onto it and recognize the voice speaking to my being, the well-known, dearly beloved voice of my master Tahotep. He is calling me back. And I step out of my heavenly self and put on the garment of my personal ego again. But I bring with me the consciousness of who I am. I am a human being again, but in my heart I carry the divine self that has become conscious in me, God, and from now on this divine self will be acting through my person. And slowly I open my eyes. My glance meets the deep blue, heavenly eyes of my master Tahotep. His eyes radiate the same light, the same love and the same peace I have just experienced during the blissful state in my initiation. The same light, the same love, and the same peace I now carry in my own heart. I can't bring my lips to utter a sound. I am still unable to find the connection between myself and my body. But I don't need to speak, for I know my master's every thought and wish. We are in spiritual unity, in God. All one. He lays his right hand upon my heart, and gradually I feel life returning to my body. I draw a deep breath, and the renewed regenerated stream of life flows through my numb limbs. My heart beats vigorously again. Gradually I regain control of my body. Tahotep and his deputy help me sit up and slowly get out of the coffin. I stand insecurely on my feet. Tahotep and the other high priest take me by the hands and lead me out of the niche where the initiation coffin stands. Then I see that all the initiates of the temple, priests and priestesses, are assembled in the great hall where the Ark of the Covenant is kept. Expectantly they are all waiting for me. And as I come out, led by the two high priests, they greet me with the sacred word and secret greeting of the initiates, Om. In this circle of the resurrected, I stand there like a newborn babe. I have the same body as before. And yet I am a new being. I find myself in a new world. I no longer see everything from the outside, but simultaneously the inner being, the core about which the external form is built up, the center for which the external form merely serves as a manifestation. I stand in the circle of the resurrected. My inner being vibrates in the tone of the sacred word, the divine mantram. And with the aid of this indescribable vibration, in this magic tone, I experience in my own physical consciousness the divine unity of the self with all these initiates and with the entire universe. They have all come, priests and priestesses, to greet me after my resurrection and to express divine infinite love. My father, Atothis, is here too, wearing the plain white robe of the initiates. Then there is the soft-spoken master Mentupta, and my dear brother Ima. The moment I see his noble countenance, his eyes light up with a smile, and I remember all my dream pictures, the most difficult tests of the initiation, the test of renunciation, giving up everything, and the test of cruel love. Ima, you dearly beloved, do you know that in my initiation vision you were the reason for my passing the most difficult test of all? The majestic figure of an elderly priestess now moves forward from the circle of initiates. She hands Tahotep a robe, and together they invest me with my priestly clothing. Then she hands Tahotep the headdress, the sign of initiates, and he sets the band of gold upon my head. In front, the circlet of gold bears the head of a serpent, symbol of the procreative energy of life, transformed and spiritualized. Now, at last, I can wear this insignia, not only as a queen, but also as an initiate. Now I am a priestess, in the lowest degree of the priesthood. It's up to me to reach the higher degrees step by step until I am worthy to be permitted to use the staff of life. Tahotep steps over to my side, lays his hand upon my head and blesses me. Then he takes me by the hand and leads me to the initiates. First, of course, to the second high priest. He too lays his hand upon me and blesses me. Then I step before my dear father and feel him, through his hand, pouring out all the love in his heart upon me. And so one by one, according to their rank, I step before each of the initiates and receive his blessing. At last I stand in front of Ima, who received his initiation shortly before me. He blesses me too, but I feel his hand tremble. Then Tahotep leads me to the Ark of the Covenant. I kneel before it. For the first time in my life I am permitted to lay my hands upon it. In every drop of my blood I feel the fiery power flowing out of the Ark of the Covenant into my body. I breathe deeply, into my innermost being, and now with my consciousness awake, in my body, I experience the fulfillment of paradisiacal unity, the omnipotence and omniscience in God. I understand and experience the meaning of being. Wherever I turn the searchlight of my consciousness, there is clarity and light. In radiant brilliance the last and highest truths of life stand before my eyes. I experience the absolute omnipotence that comes through the guidance of divine creative power in myself. Tahotep again takes me by the hand and leads me back through the rooms through which we came here. Back through the passageways, through the stone door, back into the temple. The initiates come after us. In the temple all the neophytes are waiting, and it's my turn to officiate as priestess for the first time. I stand before the altar with Tahotep, while all the neophytes come, one after the other, to receive my blessing. Upon each I place my right hand, and each accepts my blessing in deep silence. Finally the children of the neophyte school approach, among them my little adopted son, Bagar. He kneels before me, looks at me devotedly, then bows his head and receives my blessing. O Bogar, my little Bogar, what a strange role you played in my initiation vision. This ends my first priestly office in the temple. In the little cell I used during my preparations for initiation, Tahotep leaves me alone. After the prescribed time of complete rest, I am again allowed to eat light foods and beverages. For a long time I sit on my couch, unable to shake off the effect of the strange visions experienced during my initiation. What horrible pictures! How lucky I am to wake up and find these dreams are not real. How was it possible for me to carry such pictures within myself and thus come to dream them? They just can't be real. It's absolutely impossible for people to become so depraved and degraded as to kill each other with such cruelty and with such hellish instruments. The cellar, the horrible shelter of my dream. And still I know the eternal law that a creature can only imagine pictures which could actually exist in reality. Whatever a person can imagine can materialize. If this were not so, he wouldn't be able to imagine it. But these horrible pictures. These gigantic birds piloted by the sons of men, flying overhead with a fearful roar, often climbing so high one can't see them anymore, and throwing down evil eggs upon the earth. I saw with my own eyes how these eggs destroyed everything within a wide radius of where they hit the ground. With deafening blasts, they brought down whole houses. How was that possible? And why should the sons of men put their intellect in the service of fiendish senselessness? And what strange apparatus I saw and used in my initiation visions. I heard human voices speaking from tremendous distances, and others heard my voice in the same way. How Ima would laugh if I were to tell him that people could communicate over long distances by means of such devices instead of using the much simpler method of mental telepathy. He would surely want me to give him a thorough explanation of the construction of such a device. And that I couldn't do. Just as I couldn't give a description of the inner construction of the Staff of Life or the Ark of the Covenant in a way that would enable anyone to make such devices. Yet nevertheless they do exist. And in the same way I know this telephone device can exist. And I'm a you pure, true servant of God. In my initiation dream you two had to pilot such a big iron bird. You and all the handsome, healthy young men, you had to go out in great numbers, as if bewitched, to kill others and allow yourself to be killed. How could you go along with this madness? How could you obey such inhuman orders? And who was the burning man who was my husband in my initiation dream? How close he was to my heart. He was my best friend. And still he didn't know who I am. And I don't know who he is. And so I experience each individual picture of my initiation dreams again. I recognize all the people who were my parents, brothers and sisters, friends and enemies in my present life here in Egypt. And often I really have to smile about the curious relationships. Evening comes, and the day ends with a feast in which all the priests, priestesses and neophytes take part. The Pharaoh is present too, and since the relatives of the new initiate are permitted to attend an initiation feast, my dear old Menu is there with the rest of us. As I step into the garden, she runs towards me as fast as her heavy body will carry her. Beaming with joy, she embraces me and sobs with the relief of her pent-up anxiety. Oh, how good it is to see you alive again. Tell me, will you still love me, now that you're a priestess? Will you still love me? Can I go on living with you? I stroke her dear old head and calm her fears. Menu, naturally I love you. Of course you can stay with me. Now even greater love binds me to you. As a priestess. The priestesses in the temple have different tasks corresponding to their different abilities. Some teach the temple dances. Some help the restless souls of departed dead who wander about aimlessly in the earth's atmosphere. In holy sleep, the priestesses help them on their path towards further spiritual development. Without help they would stagnate for hundreds, perhaps even thousands of years because, without organs of sense, they have no opportunity to gather experience or to contact other beings. They are introverted and find no path on which to progress. The priestesses seek out these restless souls, penetrate their beings with the power of love, and thanks to their inner identity they irradiate their consciousness with ideas that help them find a solution and a way out to their condition. These priestesses thus perform a twofold duty. They help wandering souls forward and simultaneously purify the Earth's atmosphere. There are priestesses who work towards developing healthier, more beautiful and more spiritual young people through initiating them in the mysteries of physical love. They teach young men to transmute their physical urge through the power of the spirit and to aim for a higher spiritual union, a sacrament. They also teach young men who are on the point of marrying about this sacred power, so they can transmit this energy to their wives after marriage and thus beget noble children. Lastly, certain priestesses perform the same tasks as the priests. They teach groups of neophytes, give instructions for exercises in concentration, and receive people who need advice regarding special problems. As soon as these priestesses reach an advanced degree of priesthood, they are permitted to use the Staff of Life in healing the sick. In this way, a priestess can become a high priestess. I have been assigned to this group. I am truly delighted with my task. It's nothing less than wonderful to observe the minds and souls of my pupils as they develop step by step and manifest more and more of divinity. For me, it's like watching a bit of opaque material gradually become transparent, allowing the divine creative principle to shine through. Every day I experience this with my dear neophytes. I also enjoy taking care of people who come to the temple seeking advice in affairs of the spirit or matters of the body. I receive them in my little cell, the same one Ima assigned to me when I first came to the temple. At such times people show me their other face, the face that nobody else sees. A face they often do not know themselves. I see this inner face in every creature, and it's very instructive to hear about all the different events and experiences that have shaped this inner countenance in accordance with the law of action and reaction. Oh, if only everybody could see their own and other people's inner countenances. They would never hate each other, and they would never be afraid of each other. There are no bad people. They often harm each other, doing evil things, even cruel things, to others because they believe others are going to do evil to them and they try to defend themselves in advance out of pure fear. In this way they don't give others a real reason to believe they are acting with bad intentions. But if one could only convince both parties to such evil actions that neither is acting malevolently and that both are merely afraid of each other, they would both breathe a sigh of relief and shake hands. People are ignorant and blind. They don't see each other, and this is the reason for all the enmity and hostility on earth. There's nothing more beautiful than being able to open blind eyes and watch the brilliant look of understanding and knowledge begin to shine. In addition to this work, I am permitted to be present when Tahotep or his deputy uses the staff of life to heal the sick. In the early morning they arrive, coming by themselves or with the aid of friends or relatives who bring them to the temple. Tahotep then conducts new vital force into their sick bodies. I often watch how the staff of life completely heals broken bones or horrible wounds in just a few moments' time, leaving behind only a thick spot in the bone or a tiny scar to show where the wound or the break was. Just as two pieces of metal can be welded together into one piece through heat, broken bones are mended by the staff of life, and deep wounds in muscles, ligaments, blood vessels, nerves and skin grow together again. With equal speed this staff of life can heal the most serious inflammations of the lungs, kidneys or other organs. Great indeed is the mercy and grace of God for the gift he has made to mankind of this means for the recovery of health. Beside my work in the temple I continue to fulfill the duties of the wife of the Pharaoh. Just as I used to do in the past, I sit beside my father at festive receptions and other public events. At such times I have plenty of opportunity to observe the people of the court and all the others who attend these high feasts. Sometimes we receive messengers and emissaries from strange countries. They are quite different from these sons of men among us. The color of their skin, their physical stature and the shape of their heads are all different, and they radiate different forces. They sometimes bring us wonderful things as gifts, things that are quite unknown in our country. Animals I have never seen before, precious gems, cloth, beautifully painted pottery. Father has arranged for artists to come from some of these far countries to teach our young people of the temple. On the other hand, some of our artists and wise men have traveled far abroad to teach our arts and sciences. Father has told me that we will someday visit these great countries. Ever since my initiation, I have also been permitted to go for chariot rides alone with the lions. Through my initiation, I receive the ability to guide my willpower into the nervous centers of other living creatures, thus bringing them completely under my power. I now control in my own body the activated nerve centers which are still latent and undeveloped in the sons of men, and I can send out penetrating radiations of willpower that other such living creatures are turned into unconscious tools of my will. I never forget, however, that God's highest gift to man is the right of self-determination, and I know this right must never be infringed. That would be black magic. That's why I never use my willpower against a person. Often enough it would be so easy to help a person solve a difficult problem if I were merely to fill him with my will. But this would mean that I would be taking on the responsibility myself, and the solution of the problem would be mine, not his. In this way I would be robbing him of an opportunity to pass a test. Every person must solve his own problems, for only in this way can he gather experience, develop his willpower and widen the horizon of his consciousness. Animals are directly subject to natural forces. They automatically and instinctively carry out the will of nature and possess no self-determination. So I can completely subject my lions to my will. It's wonderful how these magnificent animals immediately carry out my thoughts. They react to the slightest impulse of my will, and I often have the feeling that they belong just as much to myself as my hands and feet do.